Hail and well met. Welcome to another episode of Self-Evident. I'm Jenna, and this episode is part two of our conversation with Dr. Carl Benzio, who is a Christian psychiatrist and the co-founder of Honey Lake Clinic in Florida. For more information about his work as a treatment provider and what Honey Lake Clinic offers, go to honeylake.clinic. Now, on with our conversation.
So what advice would you give to us, to young women who want to date with the intention of marriage, but they're struggling to find men that line up with their values and hold those intentions the way you were just elaborating on?
Yeah, you know, I think each person has to take a look at themselves to figure out how am I wired? How am I wired? You know, some people are wired that they can date relatively informally as a opportunity to practice skills, right? Practice different relationship skills, understanding themselves, you know, how to connect with people, how to share with people, how to sacrifice a little bit for people.
Yeah.
You know, tonight I want Chinese food. Well, I don't really want Chinese food. I want Italian. Well, okay, well, how about if we both get takeout, or tonight we do Chinese, tomorrow we do Italian? You know, you learn how to compromise and you learn how to do those kind of things. Some people are wired that they can do that and they cannot get too serious in the process. Some people are wired that the person that they're going to date, they have to seriously consider, is this somebody I can marry?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. And so each person is different. So trying to figure out if you're a person that, you know, you're looking at this person as, well, this is a person that has to be marriage material. They're not a practice field. They're a marriage material. Then it's going to be hard to just casually date.
Yeah, that is definitely something that I experienced. I think it was about 2 years ago, and I still remember it very vividly because I thought that, you know, a date wouldn't hurt and it could be a experience and I can understand what the dating scene looks like. And so I agreed to go on a date, and I still am scarred from it because I found out that I am not, in fact, one of those people who can just go on a casual date.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's an important thing to learn about yourself. You know, it might have hurt you at that time and still has some hurt with it, but it's important to be able to learn from that. And it sounds like you learned a little bit about your temperament, a little bit about your relational style and what's important to you and what the kind of depth that you have in a relationship fairly quickly in the process, right? And so either way isn't bad. It's just what your personality and what your temperament is, whether from growing up and the temperament and personality that you were born with and wired with, you know, the combination of those things and mixed with the relationships that you've had with your parents, with your siblings, with your same-sex peers, with opposite-sex peers, what the kind of community that you have around you. Some people are extroverts, and so they have a bunch of different relationships, and it's easy for them to casually date and engage, and some people are more introverts or more serious about things, and that's sort of the way I was. I was a person that was a little bit more serious about things, being an introvert. You know, yeah. So to me, it was hard for me to just casually date a couple different people at the same time.
Me too.
I was committed to that person, and they were committed to me, whether it was the competitive mindset in my head, you know, and feeling like you were competing against people or what, you know, some of it was, I think, a seriousness in me that was a helpful thing. And some of it was an insecure part of me that needed reassurance or that didn't want any competition in the process because that would push my insecurity buttons. So I think each person needs to understand who they are. Then with that, you know, if you're a person that's a fairly serious person, then it's figuring out, well, how do I grow myself as much as possible? Because healthy people look for healthy people.
Right.
So I want to be as healthy of a person as I can. I want to make, what I see so much in marriages is you know, ideally whenever two people come together in marriage, each person is individually able to take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, by take care of themselves, I don't mean financially they're able to take care of themselves and be independent from their parents, or that geographically they live in a different apartment or house than their parents. I mean, certainly those elements, but psychologically, emotionally, they're able to be pretty independent.
Right.
They're able to manage themselves psychologically, independent, relationally, and not be dependent, codependent, tied in, enabled by with other people. Because most people I see when they get married, they're not really able to take care of themselves fully.
That is very fascinating to hear, especially I have a lot of peers getting married around me. And when you were saying that, it, my goodness, that is so true. There's a lot of codependency going on.
Right. So one person isn't fully independent. The other person isn't fully independent. So ideally, each person is able to take care of themselves and have leftovers.
Right.
And so whenever they form a third entity, right, a marriage or a significantly serious relationship, you know, that has a lot of stuff going on. I'm not just talking sexually. I'm just talking just the intertwining that you have psychologically and emotionally when you're really serious and really committed. Obviously, marriage is the most serious and most committed. But when you form that third entity, well, you have to keep Guy still moving forward. You have to have enough resources to keep Girl significantly moving forward. But now you have to have enough resources between the two of you to keep the couple entity. So you have to be having three entities moving forward, right? And so most people aren't even able to do the Guy and the Girl independently, let alone when they form the third element. Now they have to steal from, you know, each of those two individuals to help the third entity move forward. So all three of them are starting to get compromised. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes when they're married and they're struggling, they're like, well, what we need to do is we need to have a baby. If we just have a baby, that would make everything better. Well, now you're bringing a fourth thing to take care of because they aren't independent at all. And they need a lot of help, you know, in their daily, you know, feeding and, you know, finances and living conditions and electricity and, you know, emotional, just speaking into their life and caring for them and coming alongside and comforting. And so if Guy wasn't able to do that on his own and have extra left over, and Girl wasn't able to do that on her own and have extra left over, and the couple isn't able to be maintained pretty healthy and steadily and independently by the leftover that they have to then have enough, wow, we can bring in a fourth, you know, part of this grouping. Yeah. That's when things really start to struggle. And that's when people start to look other areas. And so you have that 7-year itch because they haven't, you know, they're in the honeymoon phase, so they don't realize that. And then they're young and they're trying to push forth into their career. So their career sort of distracts them from the lack of their own individual independence, autonomy, and their ability to make a third entity, a marriage, work. And then they bring in that fourth and that fifth, and they're so overwhelmed and in over their heads with trying to scurry and keep all the fingers and the holes in the dike plugged, you know, and, you know, trying to, you know, they only have 10 fingers and there's, you know, 50 holes that they're trying to keep plugged. And then they start to get burnt out and tired. And then that's where that, you know, you hear the 7-year itch, where people start to look elsewhere and they start to have an affair, whether it's a sexual affair, whether it's an emotional affair, whether it's pornography, you know, that starts to creep in, whether the guy just starts to spend way more time with his buddies and he's starting to not come home as frequently or, you know, on time for dinner or, you know, to hang out with the kids or, you know, whether he's doing fantasy football or, you know, video games or, you know, checking out at night playing video games and not connecting with her or the kids. That 7-year itch, she starts to get more disconnected and frustrated. And it's because they didn't come into it fully equipped to start with. So, you know, to go back to the beginning, well, what can you do while you're waiting? How to continue to equip yourself as much as possible? You know, so God sometimes doesn't bring that person. Sometimes we sort of impulsively engage a person, you know, and get married way before, you know, to somebody that God really didn't have planned for us, because we just couldn't wait the timeline. But, you know, whenever my kids were growing up, I'm not a believer in giving them privileges when they get to a certain age.
Yeah.
So when you get to a certain age, oh, you can do this. You can get an iPhone. You can get your ears pierced. You can go on a sleepover. You can go to a PG movie. You can, you know, whatever. You can stay up till X amount of time. We always gave them privileges and opportunities based on skills that they had. So when you show me you have skills to manage whatever the situation, whatever the privilege is, whatever the opportunity is, usually privileges also have temptations. Privileges take skills to manage and to navigate, whether you're going over to a sleepover at a friend's house and they want to watch something on TV that's inappropriate, or a movie, or look at a magazine that's vulgar and pornographic, or whether they want to lie, or whether they want to gossip, or they want to make a prank call. Back in our day, you know, make a prank call to a neighbor's house or, you know, somebody else's house, or, you know, you want to sneak stuff out of the refrigerator and lie to the, you know, the authority in the house. You know, there's various different things that are going to happen. You're going to be tempted when you're in these extra special privileged responsible situations. There's responsibility that's necessary in their skills. And so whenever you put somebody in a situation that's above their skill level, you set them up for failure.
That is very interesting.
I want to set my kids up for failure by putting them in situations and giving them privileges that they aren't ready for.
Yeah.
So, and that's what encourages them to then, hey, show me you got skills.
Yeah.
By making your bed, by listening to your mother, by being courteous to the people in the grocery store, by saying thank you, by holding a door, you know, for an older person that's, you know, walking out of the grocery store, you know, whatever. Show me you have skills. When you show me you have skills and then you want a privilege, and if the privilege is, you know, is based on a certain skill level that you have, I'm more than happy to give you those opportunities and those privileges and those responsibilities.
Yes.
And you can show me that you have those skills, and that, you know, you, the kid gets more self-esteem, the kid gets more proud of themselves, the kid gets more, you know, energized and motivated to practice those little chores and those little things that they do around the house and their interactions with people, because they want to grow their skills because they want to step into these really cool things. And so dating wise, you know, God, to me, I think is going to bring that person when we have the skills requisite for that relationship that he wants us to be in.
I really appreciate
that. That's a really good insight.
Yeah. Especially, are you familiar with Pastor Doug Wilson? So Pastor Doug Wilson is, he pastors a church in Moscow, Idaho, and he has this saying, be the kind of person, the person you want to marry wants to marry. And he kind of has the same outlook where, you know, if you want a leader, if you want somebody who is consistent in their faith and will be able to help you run further up and further in into knowing Christ, then you need to start that right now. And so that definitely seems to be a very, very solid way in order to you pursue Christ, and Christ will send somebody alongside you who is pursuing him with as much speed and as much passion as you are.
Running in the same lane, so to speak.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what you then want to be working on is, so what are those skills that I need to be working on? So how do I put myself in situations, whether that be at church, whether that be in small group, whether that be the friendships that you do have, how to continue to expand your friendship group. And, you know, that could be serious friends, that could be close friends, that could be same-sex friends, that could be opposite-sex friends, that could be friends of your same faith, that could be friends of different faith. And, you know, maybe there's some unbelievers that, you know, God wants you to minister to, wants you to care for, that wants you to learn sort of forgiveness and acceptance, obviously not condoning certain inappropriate behaviors, but, you know, certainly helping guide and being God's tangible hands of compassion and love, you know, to that person. So there's a whole bunch of different ways that we can go about learning that self-control, that self-discipline, self-awareness, how to be able to lean on him more and sort of see, well, where is he growing me? What is he, you know, preparing me for? And how do I continue to grow in the skills for that particular situation, you know, that he has ahead for me?
I love that. Thank you so much for that. I actually have one final question that I'd loved your insight on as a psychiatrist and as a father yourself. I've had multiple friends go on to dating apps to try and find a significant other. And especially among Christian circles, there's a trend with Christian females where they think that they'll never find anybody. And so thus they become desperate and they want to, you know, kickstart their lives of marriage and partnership now instead of kind of plodding along where they are. So what are your perspectives on dating apps and meeting somebody through that line of social media?
You know, I've learned a lot of people have met their spouse on dating apps. My brother and sister-in-law, they met on a dating app, and we have friends at church, a person I'm on a you know, the care ministry team with is dating somebody now that, you know, and she's an older lady, and, you know, she met somebody on a dating app, and they're in a nice, rich relationship. And, you know, I think that when you're in school, it's easy to meet people.
Mm-hmm.
You meet a lot of people at school.
Yeah.
When you get out of school, it's a lot harder to meet people. You meet people at work. Should you really date people at work? I'm not sure if that's a good thing or not. You know, in our healthcare field, doctors and nurses date each other all the time. Healthcare people, you know, you share these very intense, I don't know if you ever watched the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock, but they share a very emotionally intense experience together that sort of draws them together. And, you know, you see that all the time in healthcare, where these, you know, life or death situations or these very traumatic situations, it, you know, when you're in the midst of it with each other and you share those kind of experiences with each other, it really does bring you together in very powerful ways. Without appropriate safeguards, it can lead to a lot of inappropriate behavior in that process. Yeah. And so at work, you know, we get drawn together because we share these experiences. We work together with somebody, or we're there 8 hours a day, 5 days a week with somebody. So there's just a lot of time spent with that person. But then if it works out great, awesome. But if it doesn't work out great, and if you break up, then now you're seeing that person all the time. What's your personality style? Is that something that you're able to tolerate and handle? Are you able to be friends with somebody that you had a significant relationship with, but now don't have a significant relationship with? Again, each person sort of needs to know their temperament, their relational style, how serious they get, how they're able to move on from things as opposed to harbor and ruminate about the what ifs, what could have been, and, you know, boy, they did this to me, or I said that to them, or, you know, whatever. I'm an engineer. I'm very pragmatic, and I solve problems for today and move forward. And so whatever happened in the past, there's some memories of it, but it, you know, I move pretty quickly forward in the process and don't harbor anger, revenge, or bitterness, or significant hurt from those kind of things. Whereas other people, they're very sensitive to those things. So, you know, do you really meet those people at work, and do you want to, you know, risk that, boy, this might not work out, and now we have to work with each other, what would that look like, kind of thing. So there's church where you can meet people, there's work where you can meet people, and then trying to figure out, well, what are those activities? You know, if you play sports, if you play pickleball, you know, if you play in a band, if you play music, or you're, you know, reading club, knitting club, hiking club, biking club, there's various different things that you can do that, one is just an enjoyment for you, a hobby for you, an activity for you, either exercise or something to stimulate your mind or something to enjoy. But you might find somebody that you can meet in that situation, and you at least have one thing in common, that shared interest in that particular activity, to see, you know, do you build on that? Because there's so much going on that you want to sort of vet in a process, and some people are a little bit more impatient, or you don't want to spend time on 3, 5, 8, 10 dates trying to gather data, you know, an app allows you to gather data pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Now, the app doesn't check, you know, they don't give you a lie detector test on the app to determine, is that information accurate that you're, you know, that the app is listing, you know, but you would hope most people, at least the, most of the people I've found, as you go on various different apps, whether it's a, you know, a homosexual app, a, you know, a Tinder, you know, a hookup app, or whether it's a Christian dating app, you know, most apps, you sort of go on that particular app for a particular reason. So yeah, there's an occasional predator that sort of goes into a different space. But for the most part, I think people go to that particular sector of the zillion apps that are out there. They go to the particular apps that they are going to, because that's sort of the mindset that they have, and that's sort of the mindset that they're looking for, you know, in the process. So now you're going to get a lot of data. Most of it is probably going to be fairly accurate. There's probably maybe a little embellishment. Are people really as self-aware as we would like them to be? Maybe not. Maybe they're trying to make people, you know, maybe make themselves look a little better to, you know, at least get over the first hurdle, you know, with somebody, so that they can get a chance to show that some of my intangibles or some of my hard to describe attributes will really catch your eye once you get a chance to be in the same room with me, or eating dinner with me, or whatever, you know, kind of mentality, especially from a psychological and spiritual. It's hard to really, on paper and pencil, or in a, you know, even if it's a video clip of 3 or 5 minutes, to really, you know, share some of the neat things that are inside a person until you really spend time with them. But at least that gets you farther down the line, and allows you to speed up the vetting process and the gathering of data. And now you can have a place to leap off to be able to vet more data. And, you know, how do you see them? You know, I really like to look at people and see, how do they interact around other people?
Yeah.
So, you know, they might be on the phone and they're in front of me. And on the, when they're on the phone with the person, they, you know, that person on the other end might be saying something stupid or whatever. And, you know, they cover the mouthpiece, or they put it on mute, and they tell me something like, boy, this person's full of crap, or they're, you know, well, if they're saying that around behind that person's back, how do
what
I know
they saying
they're not
about you?
Saying stuff about me behind my back, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so or if they're willing to punch that person, are they going to be willing to punch me?
Yeah.
Or if they're, you know, if they're willing to, if they only have their own sense of satisfaction in mind and what their needs are they really looking out for my needs?
Yeah.
And I think so, trying to figure out, and you're trying to vet as you see them with other people. So, you know, a lot of times we do the individual dates. You know, I'm not a big group date person, especially initially, but once you have a couple individual dates to sort of see, well, what are they like around people, and how do they treat other people? Do they treat, you know, the lesser person in your group, so to speak, with respect and courtesy, or do they, you know, ignore that person because they don't seem like a very important person in the pecking order of the group hierarchy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to see people that, you know, even the least of these, they have compassion, they have love, they have respect. They don't have to spend all the time with that person, you know, in that particular bowling or, you know, what axe throwing or whatever kind of activity we're doing. But they should be able to at least be respectful, greet the person, be nice to the person, and have that person feel like part of the group and not feel like an outsider based on, you know, my girlfriend's view of that particular, or how she's treating that particular person.
Yeah, that is really good insight into.
And it kind of reminded me of your relationship, Alyssa, with how you initially got to know your husband with, with Alyssa's husband. He initially had asked her to go out one-on-one, and well, she wasn't comfortable with that initially, but so they got to know each other through Bible study, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was through church activities and a couple one-on-one conversations. What really drew me to him, though, was when I told him that I wasn't ready to go out on a date with him because I had just met him, that he didn't shun me. He didn't give me the cold shoulder. He really made an effort just to be my friend and make sure that I was comfortable around him and felt safe around him. He even asked my father's permission to date me. So those things really endeared me to him. That showed me that he was in it for the right intentions, that he wasn't just looking to get with me sexually. So to be very plain with you, that he was really looking to get to know me as a person. So,
Know, those are important things. Those aren't guarantees, obviously, but, you know, you're starting to stack the data, right? And so the more data you can stack, you know, the better that you have, the higher probability of accuracy you have of, this guy is going to be a keeper or somebody who's serious or that's reliable, that you can trust in the process. Because, you know, if there's, you know, there's plenty of people out there that if that's your goal to sleep with somebody, you can do that on the first date with, you know, there's plenty of opportunities for that. Yeah. So to go through these extra hoops for somebody, there's obviously something more that he's desiring rather than just to sleep with somebody. And so, have you ever seen the book, how to not marry a jerk?
I have not. No.
I am very intrigued though. I haven't.
Yeah. It's a great book. It's, I want to say it's not Todd Van Imp, Jeff Van Imp, I haven't talked about him in a long time. So real neat guy, wrote this book, How Not to Marry a Jerk, and gives a lot of tips, a lot of things that we're talking about, you know, very similar kind of, you know, practical kind of things to look out for and to vet in the process. But he had a really neat sort of like a little magnetic board that he had, the thing that really, you know, impressed me. And it was just a pictorial thing that I used with many different, high school and young adult girls and guys over the years. But it was a magnetic board that had five different scales. It went from, you know, zero on the bottom to like 10 on the top with these little markers as you go up. So there's five of them. And they have like a little magnet that you can move up and down on the board in these five different areas that that you're looking at. And the five areas were this: no, K-N-O-W.
Okay.
Trust, rely, commit, and touch.
Okay.
No, trust, rely, commit, and touch. And these magnetic gauges, You know, they should be in declining order from left to right.
Okay.
So you should know a person, say a 3 or a 4 or a 5, before you should trust the person. Once you trust a person, then you can start to rely on that person.
Mm-hmm.
Once you rely on that person, you can start to commit and make commitments with that person. Okay, hey, we're going to date each other exclusively because I know you, I trust you, I can rely on you. You've shown that you've been a reliable person.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can make some commitments with each other. Hey, we're going to date each other. Hey, let's go on this trip. Or hey, let's go to so-and-so's wedding together. Or let's, you know, do whatever. You start to make commitments with each other. Hey, let's go to the same college together. You know, and continue dating. Then the last one is touch.
Mm-hmm.
And so what most people, you know, the healthy ones, you know, they should be descending from left to right.
Yeah.
So the one on the left should always be greater than the one on the right. In most relationships these days, they go in ascending order.
Yeah.
People are doing a lot of touching and having sex when they have, you know, minimal commitment to each other. They don't know each other hardly at all. So there's minimal trust and not much reliability. And so that is sort of what their graph looks like rather than the graph in the other direction.
And then it's really hard to kind of get out of that because then you're physically involved and that means you're emotionally involved and then it's really hard to actually get to know the person logically or objectively.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you're emotionally entwined and then you're making commitments and you're trying to find reasons why we need to commit and you're sort of making up data in your head or what
Still
your goals are or what he will change into or what she will change into in order for the touch to be really honed in on and be, I don't say worth it, but be validated that I've jumped to that, right? Oh, well, I really know that. I mean, he's my soulmate. I mean, that's how much I know him. He is my soulmate. So they'll push that knowing bar up to the top because they'll call him the soulmate. Well, soulmate doesn't mean you know them a lot.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have much data on this person, but man, I feel like we're kindred spirits. Like we've just known each other our whole life. No, we haven't known each other. Maybe there's some chemistry. Maybe there's some connection.
Yeah.
Maybe we're vibing in a certain way. But boy, there's a lot of data I have no idea about you. And
yeah,
I need to learn
even,
some of those things.
Yeah.
And I need to see your track record in a bunch of different areas to before I can start to develop some trust in you. I need to show you, see how, if you show up on time. Hey, we're going to be, you know, let's meet at so-and-so for dinner or for bowling. Or, you know, I told you this information in private. You know, I want to make sure you don't leak it to, you know, friend A, B, C, or, you know, this other person or whatever. Or that, you know, whenever you're, you know, when we're in front of your friends, you're not calling me names. You're not belittling me. You're not making me a butt of jokes just to look, you know, cool to your buds, you know, kind of thing. So I want to be able to trust you in those kind of situations. And I can trust you, then I can start to rely and then we can make commitments and then touch. Now, touch doesn't always mean sex. You know, you can touch, hold hands, touch, kiss, touch, you know, arm around each other. So there's some touching that can happen before, you know, the all the marbles commitment of, yay, you know, before our, you know, family and friends and, you know, before God, we're making these, you know, this covenant to each other. Now we can go to for all the marbles, intertwine, become one flesh, you know, sexual intimacy, you know, touch kind of thing. But that's where, you know, it's just a very good, I mean, it's such a good word picture. I mean, it's such an easy, easy thing. This little, I'm surprised it hasn't been around for like 1,000 years, you know, kind of thing.
So
but it was just this magnetic board with these five little cheapy magnets. And they just had these five, you know, elements on them. And this little, you know, lined, you know, bar up, you know, from bottom to top. And you just sort of move the magnet up and say, hey, well, you know, you're dating so-and-so. Put the bar where you think, you know, how much you know him.
Yeah.
Now put the next bar with how much you think you trust him.
Mm.
And then how much you think you can rely on him. And then how much commitment you should have based on how much you know, how much, and then how much commitment do you have with him right now? And you find that people are often over committing to what their know, trust, and rely really are. And then where are you in the touching phase? How intertwined are you? Because I'm an old believer that when you come together sexually, it's almost like glue. Sex is like a glue that, you know, bonds you together. And now when you rip apart, right, and not, you know, you're not married, you rip apart, there's part of you that stays, you know, the glue doesn't come apart perfectly.
Yeah.
There's some part of you that stays stuck to them, and there's some part of them that gets stuck to you.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is for the rest of your life, unfortunately. Now you have sex with another person, and now the same thing happens. You get glued to them, they get glued to you. But when you pull apart and break up, now there's parts of them that get stuck to you that haven't, you know, the glue doesn't come apart perfectly. There's not a perfect solvent that dissolves that glue and allows you to come back whole like you were before the relationship, and allows them to leave whole like they were before the relationship. It doesn't happen. So we keep on fracturing, you know, ourselves and who we are. Thankfully, there's redemption, you know, spiritually in that process. But from a psychological, emotional, relational standpoint, you know, there's stuff that happens that we don't fully get over. Right.
Yeah.
And so that's where we try to help these, you know, help everybody understand that, hey, there's this immediate gratification you get, but there's damage that happens relationally, you know, sexually, intimately, transparency, trust, vulnerability that happens whenever we do that with somebody, but then break apart.
Yeah.
We're never quite the whole same person. We can never be 100% whole again for the next person that, you know, our ultimate married relationship that we're striving for. But it's hard to explain that until you've had the experiences of that fully committed relationship and what that, how complicated, how cool, how complex, how bizarre, how unique, how different.
Right.
You can't mimic it. You can't explain it to anybody before that, but you're trying to warn them about these things, but yet there's nothing to really compare it to. So, that won't happen to me. They don't really know what they're talking about.
They're always the exception to the rule.
There's always exceptions to the rule, right? And, you know, especially young guys, we think we're the exception to every rule. So,
right. Yeah. Well, thank you, Dr. Benzio, so much for spending an hour with us and kind of giving us your wisdom on how to navigate this very exciting yet very sobering time in our lives. Especially, I believe that, I think I can speak for Kenna and I when I say that both of us do realize the gravity of the dating scene and what its purpose is supposed to be for. And I think that's why we're both so, I don't know, what would the word be, Kenna? Not trepidatious, but I don't know.
Not hesitant, I guess careful maybe?
Yeah, very cautious, I would say.
So
And I would say that that's important to be cautious, but remember, just like a pastor, we would like a perfect pastor, but there is no perfect pastor. We would love a perfect church, but you know, the church is made up of sinners, so it's not going to be a perfect church. We would love a perfect spouse, but Jesus is the only perfect person, so we're not going to get a perfect spouse. Mm-hmm. So to figure out what is the standard that I'm willing to, quote, settle for, because I'm not going to get perfection, you know, how to really find somebody that is able to be honest about their imperfections, somebody that shows that they're able to make progress about their imperfections, they have some self-awareness about them, and that, you know, my wife and I weren't perfect. We actually met at a Mardi Gras party. We weren't even really practicing Christians at the process. We met at a Mardi Gras party in New Orleans. I was from New Jersey. She was from DC. We met at a Mardi Gras party in a medical school, LSU Medical School, that a friend was having in New Orleans, and just randoms just came into the party, and a love at first sight for me. And, you know, we had our struggles, you know, when we first met, because we know we weren't living a Christian walk. But, you know, we have an incredible marriage, an incredible family now. So even if it, you know, I don't know if that was the one God had for me or not, I certainly wasn't prepared and a mature enough individual at that time. You know, she was a little bit more mature than me, but she's, you know, that wasn't what she was looking for at that time either. But that was it. We just, you know, we felt that, you know, things in our life changed, and that was that person. But God, putting him at the center of our marriage, regardless of how broken or how inadequate we were, he was able to do just incredible things in our marriage. So, you know, we love perfection. We're not going to get it. How to be able to at least vet for, is that person aware and willing to work on? You know, I was willing to work on myself. My wife was willing to work on herself. That was pretty noticeable, you know, when we met each other. So we knew that, hey, you know, we're not a perfect fit, but, you know, we have a lot in common. We have a lot that we like about each other, and we're willing to work to move things forward. As we grew in our relationship with God, boy, he exponentially provided the power and the motivation and the impetus and some of the skills to be able to help us move forward a lot faster than we ever imagined that we could in the process. So, you know, caution is good, but also, you know, be careful of expecting perfection and having too high of a bar.
Yeah, thank you.
That's definitely a good point and reminder, so we do appreciate that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Benzio. I'm so grateful that we had this conversation, and you know, you've given me a lot to think about. So thank you so much for coming on, and yeah, I hope that we can have another discussion sometime in the future.
Maybe when you're dating, we can discuss, and maybe I'll give him the interview or something.
I would love that, actually. Please, yes.
Let's do it.
If we were in person, we'd do a handshake right now to solidify that.
Mm-hmm. There you go. All right, ladies. Hey, great being with you. Great being with your listeners. God bless.
God bless you.
Thank you so much to Dr. Benzio for being gracious and willing to share his wisdom with us. And thank you for listening. Until next time, let us continue to firmly rely on the protection of divine providence. This is Self-Evident.